Hi, and welcome to Prosody, WESA's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet Tim Siebels. Tim Siebels is the author of 7 books of poetry, most recently Fast Animal by Etruscan Press, which was a finalist for the National Book Award. He has received fellowships from both the Provincetown Fine Arts Center and the National Endowment for the Arts. He also won the Open Voice Award from the 63rd Street Y in New York City. Most recently, he spent a semester as poet in residence at Bucknell University, a post awarded annually by the Stadler Center for Poetry. His poems have appeared in numerous literary journals, including Indiana Review, Black Renaissance Noir, Cortland Review, and Plowshares. His poem, Allison Wolf, was anthologized in Best American Poetry 2010. Hi, Tim. How are you?
I'm fine, Jan.
It's really a pleasure to have you. And congratulations on your new book.
Thanks.
And the National Book Award finalist.
Yeah, it was nice. I got in the spotlight for a few minutes. It was very nice.
You always have a spotlight around you. You're the best. So you're going to start with some poems from Fast Animal.
Sure, why not?
Okay.
All right. I'll start with a poem that's the prefatory poem at the very, very beginning of the book. I'm hoping that it gives people a sense of what's to come. It's called Later. I don't know what I'm becoming. From calm to fear, my mind moves, then moves. Out there is the place, streets, storm drains, stores, where everybody goes. I point at that. Then that. There are enemies of the world in the world. Know what I mean? I see them on TV. The birds, the robins in particular, repeat a warning I think I should understand. All night they stay in the trees with their small beaks. Do they ever really sleep? If nothing more, they insist. They insist on something. Just like me, behind these windows, talking alone, as though thinking isn't loud enough. Early. It used to be early all the time. I hear my voice coloring, filling in, and I feel sure the way a seed feels sure, shoving a root into black dirt. You can't know what you're becoming. And so this next poem, I'll read you this poem. I think it'll be okay. Well, maybe it won't be okay. All right, let me read you this poem. It's called Dolores Jepps. And it grew out of a meditation on a girl I had a great fondness for when I was in high school. I mentioned the name Terry in this poem, and he was a good friend of mine. Dolores Jepps. It seems insane now, but she'd be standing soaked in school day morning light, her loose leaf notebook flickering at the bus stop, and we almost trembled at the thought of her mouth filled for a moment with both of our short names. I don't know what we saw when we saw her face. But at 15, there's so much left to believe in that a girl with sunset in her eyes, with a kind smile and a bright blue miniskirt softly shading her bare thighs, really could be the goddess. Even the gloss on her lips sighed, "Kiss me, and you'll never do homework again." Some Saturdays, my ace, Terry, would say, guess who was buying Teaberry gum in the drugstore on Stinton? And I could see the sweet epiphany still stunning his eyes. And I knew that he knew that I knew he knew I knew. Especially once summer had come and the sun stayed up till we had nothing else to do but wish and wonder about fine sisters in flimsy culottes and those hot pants James Brown screamed about. Crystal Berry, Diane Ramsey, Kim Graves, and her. This was around 1970. Vietnam to the left of us, black Muslims to the right, big afros all over my Philadelphia. We had no idea where we were, how much history had come before us, how much cruelty, how much more dying was on the way. For me and Terry, it was a time when everything said, maybe. And maybe being blinded by the beauty of a 10th grader was proof that, for a little while, we were safe from the teeth that keep chewing up the world. I'd like to commend my parents for keeping calm, for not quitting their jobs or grabbing guns, and for never letting up about the amazing, quote, so many doors open to good students, unquote. I wish I had kissed Dolores Jepps. I wish I could have some small memory of her warm and spicy mouth to wrap these hungry words around. I would like to have danced with her, to have slow cooked to a slow song in her sleek toffee arms, her body balanced between the Temptations, Five Voices, and me, a boy anointed with puberty, a kid with a B average and a cool best friend. I don't think I've ever understood how lonely I am, but I was closer to it at 15 because I didn't know anything. My heart so near the surface of my skin, I could have moved it with my hand. This is a poem. I wrote several poems in the voice of Blade, the vampire slayer. I used his voice because it helped me negotiate a certain kind of rage, for lack of a better term, that seemed to overtake me during the 8 years of darkness during the George W. Bush era. And so I'll read one poem in his voice. This poem is called Blade Historical, and it has an epigraph from Mario Vargas Llosa. It is possible that God exists, but with everything that has happened to us, could it possibly matter? You come into the world from where? From where? And the world turns toward you, fangs bared, disguised as what it is, as if this is how it has to be. As if it were normal to walk the daylight knowing something's wrong. Grow up, they say. Get a job. Go to church. And after a while, you stop fighting it and try to smile. Don't you ever wonder whose blood is in the banks? It's yours. Follow the money. Back to the plague and the rise of the papacy, the Inquisition, the burning times, the explorers and the explored. So many centuries, so much death. You can still taste it on the wind. Some days I think with the singing of my blade, I can fix everything. Even the sadness that says nothing that matters will change. Some days, I think I should never have been.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet Tim Siebels, reading from his new book, Fast Animal. Wonderful poems, Tim. I love that you went to the Inquisition. It reminded me of, I don't know if you've ever heard Bruce Weigel talk about the Inquisition, but in some of his poems, he has that, remember the Inquisition. Mm-hmm. Let's not forget power and control, where it started. And so great, great poem. Mm-hmm. But I want to ask you about, I love your sense of your use of vernacular speech in your poems and how it interacts with image. And I think you do that so seamlessly. Can you talk about the choice to use vernacular speech or not, and what that means to you as a writer?
Okay. Well, there are a couple of things that I think about when I'm writing poems. How is it that I can make the voice, whatever the voice is that is conducting itself through a particular poem, how can I make that voice feel the most authentic? And also, given who I may be speaking about or to, what kinds of speech gestures will make the audience feel most familiar and most connected to the subject matter? And so, when often in the process of revision, that's when I make, of course, the final choices about what's going to be kept and what's not going to be kept. But what governs the choice to use vernacular and when is about when I think it will be the most resonant choice, when it will invite people into the poem in a way that they might otherwise not be invited into the poem. And those are the things that make that decision for me. I mean, when I feel like, yes, this is the place or this sounds right. So it really does come down to a kind of intuition. I can't claim that I have any particular clear explanation why they're not somewhere else. The other thing is I also like the contrast between standard English and non-standard English. I like the way it there are certain kind of sparks or small sparks anyway that fly between the different kinds of speech that we have in this country. And also I just want to honor words that and gestures and speech that are often, I don't know, you just don't hear them a lot in poetry, though you hear them more and more, I think. But yeah.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of what you hear, I haven't heard culottes and hot pants for a while. But it's good to hear them. And it reminds me that I always feel that there's a lot of the body and a lot of physical presence in your work. And when you introduced that poem, that Dolores Jepp's poem, you were very measured in saying that this began with a meditation on a girl who I had a fondness for. It was very nice. And then we got the hot pants and the culottes. But can you talk about your connection to the physical body in your work?
Okay, I mean, sure.
It's called Fast Animal.
Sure. And that's a title that has, I'm hoping, a number of kinds of resonance in it. But yeah, I'm very interested in making it clear that the erotic or the sexual aspects of our lives, you know, are a presence in my work. I mean, we spent so many centuries. Speaking of, you know, the Inquisition, we spent so many centuries obliged to be silent about things like sexuality at whatever stage, be it adult or adolescent or whatever. And so, and for me anyway, as a human being and as a poet, one of the reasons I can stand it in the world is that there's such a thing as the erotic world. I mean, I'm not sure where I left to work and philosophy, whether I could remain on this planet. I mean, I think the sensual life is a life that allows us a wondrous escape from kind of the lunacy and cruelty of this world as I'm seeing much of it, and it also allows us a kind of return to our pure animal selves. I mean, I think one of the problems with human beings, in not only in America but all over the world, is that we've struggled to reconcile our great intellects and spirits with the fact of our animal bodies. And to me, that's fundamental work that has to be done, you know, and I'm hoping to make at least a gesture toward that in my poems. I don't make any apologies for whatever sexuality I write and I try to work with. I don't know why I apologize. We've spent, you know, millennia in the shadows of ourselves. And so that's part of my interest in trying to be, to talk about desire or to try to deal with sexuality in a more direct way. There are people who've done certainly, you know, as much or more work than I have in that regard. But, it's something that I'd like to keep as a current in my work.
Okay, great. Could you read some more poems?
Sure, absolutely. This is a poem called Wound. It's the poem that contains the phrase from which the title of the book came. So I figured I should read it. Much of the work in this book is about reflecting on the things that have happened to you that ultimately made you the human being you are. I mean, I'm in my late 50s now, and there's a whole history of what made me the way I am, you know, for better and for worse. And this poem is getting at some of that. Wound. Door in the flesh, leading where? What exactly does pain teach? As if time always lived in the mirror, as if the past itself looked back. I remember what they did. I keep remembering the way consciousness turned like a fast animal to the blood on my face. Being awake suddenly meant something else. My eyes, for a second, caught the hidden slant, and whatever happened before, that also changed. Let me read something that I don't often read. This is a poem called, it's called Kiss My Villanelle, and it's a blues for James Blood Ulmer, one of the few remaining blues musicians of a particular generation, and I was lucky enough to see him not too long ago. And I wrote this poem with his kind of spirit in mind. I'm older today than I was yesterday. And somehow, I guess, I just done lost the knack. I wish I could fix that, but what can I say? I trundle around with my feet made of clay. You'd think after a while y'all might cut me some slack. I'm older today than I felt yesterday. If Sade Adu called, I'd go right away. I bet she keeps love in a black satin sack. I wish I could meet her, but what can I say? Don't look over here like I'm just in the way. Time was the fine girls kept me flat on my back. I'm older today than I did yesterday. I pagan the streets with my heart like a stray and hum with the trees till the sweet earth hums back. Don't want to be lonesome, but what can I say? When I get the good cards, you just mess up my play. Would you kiss my behind if I sat on a tack? I'm bolder right now than I'll be in a day. How can I help but get carried away? When I was a boy, I got beat with the strap. I try to forget that, But what can I say? It takes more than guts to go jump in the fray. I spit in the wind, and the wind spits right back. It's colder today than it was yesterday. I wish I could fix that, but what can I say? I'll read you something new. Why not?
Yeah, I'd like to hear some new poems.
Yeah.
Although Fast Animal is new also.
Yeah. But it's not as new as this. All right. Apparently, at least in theory, there's going to be an anthology that addresses the idea of surveillance since we've had all this craziness in the world with people being spied upon in every manner and fashion.
I haven't heard about that.
Yeah, and so I wrote this poem for that anthology. Now, who knows if it will actually manifest, but I'll read it to you. It's called For All. You watch a starling's timid quest, a simple life, afraid only of the immediate, cars, cats, having no reason to doubt what it needs, no lack of faith in this clear day, and no notion of who's behind the window with so much curiosity. For all it knows, you are simply the light feathering its small head, but you wonder what's inside the bird, what makes it fly, what harmless instruments might tell you how starlings think, why they don't see the future nesting everywhere with sharp, hungry eyes.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet Tim Siebels. He's reading from his book Fast Animal and some newer poems also. One thing I feel about your work, Tim, is what I keep being reminded of as you read is the sense that your poems are always feel necessary. And when you talked about your Blade poems, Blade the Vampire Slayer, to address the rage of the George Bush era, you're reading a surveillance poem. I feel like you are a writer who overtly, you know, puts the politics in your work and is not afraid. I feel like there's a lot of people afraid to do that, and they just gloss over it or just keep it out. Can you talk about that, the courage to do that?
All right. Well, yeah. And I certainly have poems that are not political, of course, but I want there to be a current in my work that is explicitly political. I mean, part of our lives are defined by the politics of our times. I mean, how can I not address them in some direct way in my writing? I mean, I'm not saying that everyone has to. I'm just saying for me, it feels like something that's just part of being an artist that's engaged in the world that you're in. The other thing is, when I think about it, I came of age during the time, in the 60s is when I started to form some kind of mind with regard to what this society was and how it operated. So people like Gil Scott-Heron, The Last Poets, Nikki Giovanni, among others, you know, were writing poems that were clearly intended to talk about what's going on in the world, how our community, you know, as black folks, is being impacted by this or that. And then beyond that, the whole larger discourse that was certainly driven by the hippies as well as by the Panthers, you know, about what kind of world do we want to live in? And I'd like to think that some of what I write in my poems is asking that question. What kind of world do we want to live in? Who are we? Is this good enough? You know, is this kind of bloodshed and ridiculously disparately distributed wealth, is that acceptable? Is it acceptable that we still find ourselves in various ways infected with sexism, classism, racism, homophobia? Is that acceptable? Is this a world we can tolerate? And I hope the answer is no. You know, so I just want to at least keep those things on the table in my poems, And it just is, it's just, I'm trying to assert something that matters to me and that I also imagine matters to other people.
Right, definitely. Mm-hmm. Well, I really respect you for that. We have time for one short poem.
Okay. I'll read you a poem called Edge. Edge. Traffic. Solitude. The city. Walking around. So many of us lost in it. Is love the secret? Nobody tells. In a small park, daylight pulled its knife, and a tree moved toward me. What are you doing here? I remembered then. I lit my eyes, which had gone out.
The poetry of Tim Siebels. Thank you so much. That was great, Tim.
Oh, thank you, Jan. You know it's an honor and a pleasure to be with you anytime, any place.
You've been listening to Prosody, WESA's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a biweekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the Arts Entertainment News Weekly, published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty and Ellen Wadey. Our sound engineers are Michelle Stoner and Lisa Alexander. Please tune in every Saturday morning at 6:30 for Prosody, 90.5 WESA.